this little area right here. So we're excited that you're here. Hope that you guys will come back and see us again sometime soon. Turn to 1 Samuel 12. We are talking about heroes of faith. On Wednesday nights, for those of you that are visiting, we're having a different speaker coming in every single Wednesday night, and we've done that throughout the summer, and we'll continue throughout the summer. And so for the summer, I thought it would be a good thing for us to look at some passages from the book of Hebrews and look at some heroes of faith from the book of Hebrews. So we'll be looking at Samuel this morning. There was a minister who got pulled over for speeding. You know, he was a little embarrassed by that, but he got a little bit more embarrassed because when the police officer came to the window, he automatically smelt wine. And he was thinking, you know, what in the world? And so he said, "Sir, have you been drinking? I pulled you over for speeding, but I kind of smell wine." And he says, "I've just been drinking water." And he said, "Huh." And so he talked to him a little bit more, and then he looks down and he sees a wine bottle down in the floorboard. And he looks at him again and he said, "I think that's a wine bottle." He goes, "I've just been drinking water." He says, "Well, sir, I can smell wine." And the minister goes, "It's a miracle. He did it again. Turned the water into wine." That's what it was, right? You would think that a minister would not want to tell a story, right? Wouldn't want to lie. We want to talk about speaking truth this morning. What it means to speak truth. Not just telling the truth, but speaking truth. Because truth is a really important thing. And so I want to look at Samuel this morning because he's a man of integrity and he's known for speaking truth, right? Let's look at Hebrews 11, 32, real quick. You don't have to turn if you don't want to. It'll be up on the screen. But this is where we've got the last few lessons from this particular passage. The writer of Hebrews says, "And what more shall I say? I don't have time to tell you about Gideon," which we had time to talk about Gideon, "and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, about David and Samuel and the prophets." So we're going to talk about Samuel this morning. When we were on vacation, we had some wonderful times. There was also some interesting things. I don't know about you guys. I love to people watch. And you go down to the river in South Texas. We went to the Frio River and float the river, and you're going to have an opportunity to do some people watching. Some quite unusual and fun and exciting people watching. But what was even more exciting is the fact that when people are floating the river, they bring, you know, lots of extras with them. One of the things they bring is a boombox. And so as people are floating down the river, they're playing their favorite songs. As you're also floating down the river, you've got folks on the side that set up their little canopies, and they're playing their music. And the song Macarena, or Macarena, however you would say that, came on. And I was like, "Well, I haven't heard that song in forever." You know, we're doing the whatever the movements are, which I don't remember. I know you do something along those lines. And I was kind of laughing at what? That was terrible. I don't know the moves, but there's something like that. Do you want to stand up and do that? I didn't think so. Didn't think you were going to show off. But I thought about who sang this song, right? Who sang the Macarena? Does anybody know? If you know this, it's pretty impressive. Anybody? Los Del Rio. Like, you're supposed to know that, right? Who's Los Del Rio? They sang Macarena, right? But that's all they ever did. They were a one-hit wonder song. So I looked up a couple of other songs that I thought, well, okay, Kung Fu Fighting. Do you guys remember that? Kung Fu Fighting. Yeah, that song, right? Can't sing either. I can't do the Macarena moves and I can't sing. But anybody know who sang that song? You should know this. It should be come off the tip of your tongue. Carl Douglas, right? And then what was weird is the other night, Karen and I were doing something, and Karen goes, "Who let the dogs out?" You know, and I was like, "Funny, I'm going to use that in my sermon." She goes, "You are not." And I went, "Yeah, who let the dogs out?" Anybody remember who sang that? Baha Men. Baha Men. There you go. That's pretty impressive. I figured somebody might know that one. But they're one-hit wonders, okay? There are songs that are one-hit wonders, and nobody knows the artist because they didn't really do a whole lot more than that, okay? But there's others who we know quite well that have this huge body of work, so to speak, right? They've got all of these songs that they put together. I was thinking of guys like Elvis Presley, you know, hundreds of songs. I mean, lots and lots and lots of hits and number one songs. And Justin Timberlake is a pretty popular song writer and performer. Michael Jackson did a lot of stuff. And then I thought of some groups like the Beatles, and then the greatest group of all time that everybody knows all their stuff, Journey, right? The group Journey. That's my favorite group. But they have created all of these. Do I? It's a good one, right? Yeah. They created all of these songs. They had this whole life work of songs. And so we remember them for that. When I think about Samuel, I don't think of him as a one-hit wonder. He didn't just do one thing for God. He didn't just do one thing that we go, oh, that's really cool what he did. His name kind of shows up as a flash in the pan, so to speak. He had this incredible body of work, so to speak. His whole life was dedicated to the Lord. His whole life was dedicated to listening to God and speaking truth for God. And so I want to talk about him this morning. As we've talked about these other great men and women of faith, we've noticed some things about them in regards to their life, right? There's some sin in their life. There's some difficulties in their life. We talked about David after a man after God's own heart just 2 weeks ago. And I know David Skidmore spoke last week, and I don't know what he spoke about, but 2 weeks ago, bless you, I spoke about David, a man after God's own heart, and how we can fashion our hearts after him. But we also mentioned the fact that he had some sin in his life, right? He had this affair with Bathsheba. He caused the death of her husband. He went through some turmoil in his life, and yet he was still a man after God's own heart, which bides well for us, bodes well for us, because we have sin in our life, and sometimes we struggle, but God can still consider us very worthy, and through Christ, we're all blessed in that way. But I was thinking back, Noah, one of the first things he did after getting off the ark is he goes and gets drunk, right? And he's considered one of these men of faith. By faith, Noah built an ark. And you think about Abraham and what a faithful man he was. And yet there are a couple of times when he gets caught in these half-lies about his sister, about his wife, Sarah. You think of Jacob, right? The deceiver, the schemer. I mean, he was really good at kind of doing things and getting away with those things. And yet these are men who are considered faithful. But when I started looking at Samuel, I couldn't find anything negative about Samuel. It's not to say that he didn't have something in his life that was negative, but you just don't read about it. It's not written down within Scripture. And I think that's pretty impressive in regards to Samuel. Judah is struggling with sin and rebellion against God. What else is new? Right? I mean, they're consistently doing their thing and consistently doing it incorrectly. All right? God is frustrated with Judah's sin. What else is new? And their constant rebellion against God. And so it was during these times that the judges show up and all those kinds of things that are happening. But what's interesting is here in Jeremiah chapter 15, verse 1, I thought this was really cool because I was thinking last week, Jordan Spieth, golfer, if you don't know who that is, I love golf. Jordan Spieth won the British Open, and they started throwing his name out with names like Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods. That's good company to keep if your name's going to be thrown out there. Well, I thought this was kind of interesting. In Jeremiah 15:1, the people in rebellion against God, God's frustrated. He's talking to Jeremiah, and he says, "Then the Lord said to me, Jeremiah, even if Moses and Samuel were to stand before me, my heart would not go out to this people. Send them away from my presence. Let them go." So he's saying, hey, you know what? If Samuel, who is really good about talking to the people of God or talking to God for the people, if Moses, who is really good about jumping in there and trying to help God, not get so angry at the people's rebellion, and Moses is pleading for the people and praying for the people, he says, let me tell you something. If Moses, who's a pretty faithful servant of the Lord, or Samuel, we're standing here right now, I still wouldn't hear their voices. I'm so frustrated, God says, at these people. So Samuel is dedicated to God. What's interesting is he's dedicated to God really before he's born. Remember, Hannah prays to God, "God, give me a son, and I'll dedicate him to you." And so Hannah does that. As soon as he's old enough, he is given to Eli the priest, and his whole life is spent in the priesthood, in dedication to the Lord. But he didn't have a choice to be dedicated, but he did have a lot of choices afterward to follow in the ways of the Lord, right? To do what God has asked him to do. And he did that all the way through his life. The text this morning is from 1 Samuel chapter 12, verses 1 through 5. I want to remind you that Samuel is a little upset because the people want a king like all the other nations have. And Samuel feels like they're commentating on his ability to lead them. And God says, no, let me remind you, they're denying me. All right, they don't want me to be their king. They don't want me to be their God. They'd rather go follow, like all the other nations, follow after them. And so Samuel is talking to Israel, and this is what I wanted to explain in regards to what Samuel felt he could say about himself. He says, hey, I've listened to everything you said to me, and I have set a king over you. Now you have a king as your leader. As for me, I'm old and gray, and my sons are here with you. I have been your leader from my youth until this day. Here I stand. And these are powerful words. Testify against me in the presence of the Lord and his anointed. Whose ox have I taken? Whose donkey have I taken? Whom have I cheated? Whom have I oppressed? From whose hand have I accepted a bribe to make me shut my eyes? If I have done any of these things, I'll make it right. So he's standing in front of the people and saying, I didn't steal your donkeys. I didn't take your oxen. I didn't take a bribe. I didn't do any of that stuff. And if I did, then tell me about it because I'll make amends for it. But the people say, you've not cheated or oppressed us. You've not taken anything from anyone's hand. Samuel said to them, the Lord is witness against you and also his anointed is witness this day that you've not found anything in my hand. He is witness, they said. Wouldn't that be great if we could trust our leaders in the same way that we could have trusted Samuel? Wouldn't it be great to know that we could go to a politician, so to speak, and say, hey, anybody ever given you a donkey? Anybody ever given you an ox? You know, they probably look at you and go, okay, security, get this guy, right? Has anybody bribed you? Has anybody pushed the right button? Has any lobbyist come along and preached about their agenda? Have you ended up with a great vacation trip? Have you gone, you know, to some wonderful place and suddenly been given something that you didn't get any other time? I mean, I don't know that every one of the politicians are crooked, but I kind of almost feel like, you know, it'd be nice to find out they're a good story about some of them every once in a while instead of all the stuff that we hear each and every day. And so you point toward Washington, and then all of a sudden I thought to myself, oh, that's not fair. Because I can point toward Washington and make myself feel good about it, but the question this morning is, can people say that about me? Can they look and say, hey, Mike Basket, have you ever taken anybody's donkey? Have you ever taken their oxen? Have you ever taken a bribe? Have you ever, you know, done something that you shouldn't have done because you wanted what you wanted and not what God wanted? So that puts it back on us pretty personal, right? I mean, this morning, that's a little stronger than pointing in our politicians. So I think that's important for us to keep in light this morning. So, putting Samuel's life in context. He's brought up in a time when the people are in rebellion to God. I don't know if you guys remember this or not, but I talked about this in the sermon when we talked about Barak and how there was a cycle, right, that Israel would go through this cycle. They would have peace and prosperity, then they'd have rebellion, and then they'd have punishment, right? Everything would be going great. They'd rebel against God. God would punish them. Then they would experience that punishment, usually at the hands of the Ammonites or the Philistines or the Amalekites or somebody, some other nation would punish them. They would repent. They would be sorrowful about it. God would restore them and they would have recovery. So they'd come back and have peace and prosperity and everything's going great. And then they rebel against God and the whole cycle would continue. I don't know if you remember this quote or not from then, but insanity, right, is defined. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. That's insane. That's what the people of God did. They would do the same exact thing and then suddenly go, well, why are we being oppressed? Why are things happening the way they're happening? I can't believe this. You know, and God just goes, you know, duh. Which I'm sure God didn't go, duh. But you know what I mean. The frustration of that. So Samuel comes out of these times, right? And I think Judges chapter 21 verse 25 is a perfect commentary of their time. Because it says there, in those days, Israel had no king. Everyone did as they saw fit. Now, keep in mind, this is Samuel's day. But this is 2017, isn't it? In those days, America had no God. I think you could put easily there. Everyone did as they saw fit. I mean, everyone does that here, right? It's called relativism. I remember taking a master's class when I was working on my master's, and it was all about moral codes and how people chose what was right and what was wrong based on these different ethics. Relativism. Whatever feels right for me is right. If it feels good, it must be good. If everyone else is doing it, it must be a good thing to be done. Right? And so that's kind of a moral code. I can do whatever I want to do as long as it feels right. Does it feel good? Yeah, it kind of feels good. Well, that must be all right. Right? That's the ethic that a lot of Americans have. That's the ethic that a lot of folks in the world have. If it feels good, so be it. Well, that's the kind of ethic they had. Everyone did as they saw fit. God seemed silent to the people. Why? Look what it says in 1 Samuel 3:1. The boy Samuel ministered before the Lord under Eli. Right? This is a young Samuel. And in those days, the word of the Lord was rare. There were not many visions. So God is silent. Not a lot of stuff coming from God. Not a lot of listening going on. Not a lot of speaking going on. Because no one's hearing anything God says. They're doing what they want to do when they want to do it. Their agendas were more important than God's agenda. And again, we have a lesson that should pierce our hearts a little bit. You know, are our agendas more important than God's agenda? Is our desires more important than God's desires? Because then we get into this idea of, hey, I'm not letting the Bible speak and be my moral guide. I'm letting my heart or my mind or my friendships decide what's right and wrong. And the world's not supposed to do that. So God needed an ear, right? God needed an ear and God needed a voice. And so Samuel shows up as a spokesperson for God. He's going to be not only he's not only listening to what God says, he's going to speak what God says. So he's going to speak this truth. Going back to Samuel's life, God is calling Samuel. I don't know if you remember the story. He's a young man in Eli's house, and God is calling him. And so he hears this calling, and he thinks it's Eli. So he runs in there to Eli, and he's like, "Yes, sir. What do you need?" And Eli goes, I didn't call you. Go back to bed." So he, you know, goes back to bed and he's laying there, and all of a sudden he hears calling again. And he's like, "Oh!" He runs back to Eli. And he's like, "Hey, yep. What do you got?" And Eli goes, "Samuel, I didn't call you. Go back to sleep." So he goes back and he lays back down. God calls him a third time. Samuel comes a third. By this time, Samuel's probably going, "Really?" You know, it's like he's this old guy that can't even hear himself. He's like, "Yes, Lord, what do you need?" And Eli goes, I'm not calling you, but it's the Lord calling you." He goes, "Oh, here's what you need to do. Go back and lay down. And when the Lord calls again, you say, 'Speak, Lord. Your servant is listening,'" right? "Speak, and I'm listening." And so that's what happens. And God speaks to Samuel, and Samuel listens. And he hears everything that Samuel or that God says. And Samuel then later is questioned by Eli. And Eli says, "Hey, I want you to tell me everything that God told you and spoke to you in that vision." And I don't know if you remember what was spoken to him in that vision, but what was spoken to him in the vision was, well, I have it written in verse 17. "Do not hide it from me." This is what he says in verse 17. "May God deal with you ever so severely if you hide from anything. Hide from me anything he told you." And verse 18 is the kicker. "Samuel told him everything, hiding nothing from him." Now, what did he tell him? Remember, God said he was going to judge Eli's sons for their evilness. They were in rebellion against God. In fact, God says they have blasphemed against me. And he's mad at Eli, too, because he's told Eli a couple times, and Eli refuses to do anything about it. So he's not happy with Eli. He's not happy with Eli's sons. He's going to take the priesthood essentially away from him, and Samuel's going to become his spokesperson now. And yet, that's bad news for Eli. And Eli's like, "You tell me the truth." And Samuel says, "I will tell you the truth." He is a speaker of truth. From a little bitty age, as a young man, he's going to speak the truth. He's going to tell it like it is. And I love the fact that Will read this for us just a second ago, that God blesses Samuel because of that. Look at verses 19 through 21 that he read just a minute ago. "The Lord was with Samuel as he grew up, and he let none of Samuel's words fall to the ground." And I love that phrase. He let none of his words fall to the ground. In other words, whatever Samuel said was going to happen, happened. Whatever Samuel was reminded about and told the people, it came true. Whatever God gave to Samuel, he made it into truth. Because the only thing that Samuel spoke was God's words. And I thought that was pretty special. And all of Israel, from Dan to Beersheba, recognized Samuel was attested as a prophet of the Lord. The Lord continued to appear at Shiloh, and there he revealed himself to Samuel through his word. Revealed himself to Samuel through his word. So whatever Samuel said, God had revealed it to him, and Samuel repeated it. Now, I don't know about you guys, but it reminds me of somebody else. I don't know, maybe you've heard him. You read about him in the Bible too, right? You know who I'm talking about? Huh? Jesus. Right? Wasn't that Jesus cat? You know, wasn't he that guy that everything that was ever said to him, he repeated? In fact, his words were things like, I only speak what the Father gives me to speak. My words are his words. I can only do the things my Father has given me to do. I can only say the things God has told me to say. I and the Father are one. I can't do anything that my Father tells me not to do. I don't say anything that my Father doesn't tell me to do. Now, I think that's pretty cool because Jesus is perfect. Samuel, even though we don't find any flaws, we know he wasn't a perfect individual, but he created this pattern, this idea for us, right? Something that we can see that says, hey, if you want to be faithful in God's eyes, when God tells you something, listen, and then do it, and then tell the truth in regards to it. Now, here's what's cool. Samuel spoke the word of the Lord to the people. Samuel spoke the word of the Lord to the people. Jesus was the word. In the beginning was the word, and the word was with God, and the word was God, and the word became flesh and dwelt among us, right? Full of grace and full of truth. So, even though Samuel, right, is someone we can lift up as an incredible man of faith, Jesus, as the book of Hebrews would say, is superior. Jesus is better. We've just been talking about that all the way through the book of Hebrews. In fact, here's what's cool. In the very beginning of the book of Hebrews, you have this, you know, four-verse sentence considered one of the coolest and greatest Greek written verses in the Bible. I'm not a Greek student. I know enough Greek to be dangerous. But they say it's one of the most eloquently written Greek sentences ever created, right? And in that particular sentence, the writer of Hebrews says, in the past, God spoke to the prophets and spoke to the men of old. But in these last days, he speaks to us through his Son. The Word, right? Full of grace, full of truth. So, like Jesus, like Samuel, we need to be known as a people of God who hear the Word of God and listen to it. We obey it, and then we speak that truth to others. It's not that hard. Now, the difficulty in this day and age in speaking truth is some people aren't real excited about hearing that truth, are they? Right? And then when you speak that truth, sometimes we speak that truth in contexts that aren't always valuable, and we speak the truth in those contexts, and they go, quit judging me, quit telling me, you know, how to do everything. And I tell people all the time, it's like, you know, if these were my words, then you could get mad at me all day long. You can't get mad at God for telling you truth. And I'm just telling you what God says. And so I just want to share what God says about those things. And standing up for God is difficult. Sometimes it's uncomfortable. There are times when we want to stand up for God, and there's sometimes when we just need to just not say a word, because I don't want to throw my pearls before swine. It's just a waste of time. Right? So it's through that wisdom and maturity that we choose when to speak for God and when we don't. Look at Ephesians chapter 4, 14 and 15. I think it's a wonderful context for us this morning, because Paul is saying to the Ephesians, look, we'll no longer be infants in regards to talking to others about the Lord, tossed back and forth by the waves, blown here and there by every wind of teaching. So as we're listening, by the cunning and craftiness of people in their deceitful scheming. Instead, he says, we need to speak the truth in love. Right? That love has to be in existence with truth. And that will grow to become, in every aspect, And I love this. The mature body of him who is the head, that is Christ. So as we understand how to speak the truth in love, like Samuel, listening to God's word, speaking those words, sometimes when it's uncomfortable, other times choosing not to say a thing because it's just a waste of time, but speaking the truth in love. As Christians, we're going to mature when we can figure out the times when it's important to speak and when it's just important to listen, and there's times when it's just going to be fine and dandy to say nothing. And we've got to have wisdom to know that. You know, our theme, you could say, I guess, where we do life together, right? We do this life together because we're trying to help each other. We're trying to do what our mission statement says, right? Because our mission statement's out there, right? This is a place where love works. To do what? To inspire others to love. So that we can inspire one another to love the way we need to love. Now, here's what's interesting. If God is love, and God is truth, according to Scripture, then love must be truth, and truth must be love. Right? Wouldn't that make sense? If God is love, and God is truth, then love must be truth, and truth must be love. So, truth spoken in love, what Paul is saying, is very Christ-like, very God-like. And being able to love, and love enough to speak truth, is important too. So, we need to be a people who not only embrace truth, we need to embrace the love that comes with that truth. And sometimes they just go hand in hand. And that's really important as we grow together in this faith. Remember what Jesus said in John chapter 8, verse 31 and 32? It says, if you hold to my teaching, you're really my disciples. And then you're going to know the truth, and the truth will set you free. You know, that's powerful words. When we look at it in the context of understanding what it is his teachings are. His teachings are about love and about truth. He's full of grace and he's full of truth. And so all of that teaching needs to come together in one beautiful teaching. And sometimes we mess that up, and sometimes we'll say, oh, I wish I'd have said it this way, or I wish I'd have done it that way. As we continue to grow, as we continue to mature, we're going to figure out ways to tell others and help express this love and this truth that we stand for, right? It's where we do life together. It's where we love one another. When we get outside of these walls, it's a lot tougher to speak that truth in love. Samuel was a good example for us of a man who listened and who spoke truth. Jesus is a better example, especially according to the book of Hebrews. But this morning, I want you to look at both of these men and realize that Samuel wasn't a one-hit wonder, and Jesus wasn't a one-hit wonder, right? We know their names because of an entire life devoted to the Lord. They did what they did on a constant basis. That's what God's asking for us. We use this word perseverance, or we use this word consistency, right? And so as we mature and as we grow, we're just going to get better at what we do. We'll continue to write songs. And if you weren't looking up, I did that in quotations. We're going to write these beautiful songs and perform those songs, and they're going to be Jesus songs, and they're going to, because it's going to be portrayed in our life. And people are going to smell us. I love Paul says, you know, that you're a sweet fragrance to those around you. They're going to smell something sweet. They're going to see something sweet. They're going to recognize our abilities and talents are just simply to give God the glory. And that's what it means to continue to grow in faith. Both of these men were dedicated to listening to God and telling others of God's truth. And so I want to encourage you this morning to mature and grow as disciples of Christ and do the same thing. And don't be a one-hit wonder, but go ahead and give that body of work that lasts a lifetime, and then people will know the name of Christ. We're going to sing an invitation song this morning. We're so glad that you're here. If there's something that we can be praying with you or for you about, please let us know during the singing of this song. And